You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. As a licensed private investigator and certified instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention, with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. My co-host today is Rob Spencer.
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Rob. Hey, a little bit about us and West Shield. We have escorted thousands of teens to specialized schools and programs, returned hundreds of runaways, and retrieved many abducted children. We bring a unique outlook on what our kids are going through and what can be done to help them thrive. This show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I am thrilled to have as our guest today Dr. Parth Gandhi. Dr. Gandhi is a clinical neuropsychologist and director of Neuroassessment and Development Center. He received his doctoral education in clinical neuropsychology from Brigham Young University and then completed an APA internship in clinical neuropsychology at the Utah State Hospital, followed by a postdoctoral work at Columbia Medical School specializing in the evaluation and treatment of neurocognitive disorders throughout the lifespan. Parth, seems like you're keeping pretty busy out there. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I know that a lot of the people out there, they deal with assessments like yours, but I don't know that a lot of people know the differences. I mean, you know, explain a little bit about the difference between neuropsychology versus regular psychology or psychiatry.
Sure. Well, psychology has to, or psychological assessments have a lot to do with kind of basic functioning, understanding gross learning disabilities, understanding personality functioning, or looking at psychiatric disorders, emotional disorders. Neuropsychology goes into depth in regards to what could be neurological issues that are causing problems with emotional functioning or academic functioning, interpersonal functioning. And so it really is a kind of a different specialization in understanding the background, the experience, the genetic disposition, what injury or illness, how those could affect the brain and how that plays out, and then coming up with some very specific and appropriate recommendations for parents and teachers and therapists on how to deal with such issues. So it's a greater specialization in looking at really what is affecting a student and how that plays out.
And I know that when we talked a little bit earlier, you have a clinic that you bring people into, but you also talked a little bit about the fact that, I mean, you do some of this over the phone. So I think one of the questions, how many questions do you think you'd have to ask Rob to figure out what's wrong with him?
One.
One?
only three or four, right?
Three or four. Parth, Rob is working with a lot of the kids. He is bringing a lot of the kids into the programs, and so he's getting them at that first stage. He's getting them right from the bedroom at 5 o'clock in the morning when they're being woken up. What are some of the things that he as a transport agent or we as transport agents are going to be able to look for that we could pass on to the professionals once we get to the program or if we were bringing them in to you?
Well, that's a very interesting point. I assume a lot of the kids that he would pick up go to programs, to wilderness programs, to residential programs, and so that they, you know, their disposition and how they're responding to the transport folk is, I think, very important. How they've been responding to their parents, you know, is there aggressiveness? Is there an emotional component? What is their disposition during that long transport? Are they willing to really start discussing issues and take accountability over that moment in time where change is about to happen? Or do they continue in denial and, oh, I can get my parents to change their minds on this? You know, all mm-hmm. that is really important information to pass on to the programs.
Okay. So. And Rob, why don't you take a case, a case in point, and just share a little bit of the information. In fact, I was thinking about one in particular. I brought some notes on it. Share a little bit about these people. And you remember that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. This is his yeah. things to do list.
Yeah.
Well, basically, this kid was... It was already out of program, came home, refused to go back, ran away. So he came home on a home visit, didn't want to go back, so he took off. Parents, you know, they called us, and when they found out where he was going to be, we just kind of went at that point and picked him up. When we met up with him, he was, really what I find is most of these kids are all going through the same mentality, usually at the pickup, but this kid was particularly a little bit of a, I guess, I kind of want to call it a dreamer, but he didn't really have a good grasp of reality. So we picked him up. He at first he was pretty upset, but then very quickly made the transition into being laid back, good with us. You know, blamed his parents a lot. And, from there, I mean, really wasn't really any problems at all. We just found this list of stuff on
right. Yeah. So share his to-do list after running
okay.
away.
Okay. So we have this kid that we pick up, and him and his buddy have this things that they have to do list. Okay. Number one is go to LA together. Easy. A lot of kids do that. Number two, get a place to live. Here's the interesting, this is where it kind of gets a little more interesting. Number three, we want to shoot each other with a bulletproof vest on. Number four, we want to shoot each other with a .22 handgun, which the list probably wouldn't get much past number four if you do that, even with the vest on. Number five, we want to party and do a lot of drugs, no cocaine, for the first 2 weeks. When we asked him about why that was, he said because cocaine's expensive. It's going to take him 2 weeks to save up for some cocaine. Number six, he wants to get a job and work to pay rent. Number seven, he wants to just survive for 6 months. He was 17 and a half, by the way. 6 months, he's 18. Survive for 6 months on the streets at all cost, whatever it takes. And then when he's 18, he wants to enlist in the Army and join the Army Rangers.
So, Parth, how is a psychological assessment going to be helpful with this young man?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, because I think you're right in that, I mean, he's a dreamer, and he wants to kind of live, go down this path, exploring some interesting things, some really extreme things, and then it's almost like he wants a redemptive period, you know, where he goes into the Rangers and I can change my life and I can sort of fix it, you know. And it's the assessment, you know, is there, you know, somewhat sort of delusional or problem with reality, you know, what led him to this point. I think often with psychological assessment, it's the project for the psychologist to really write the story. Where did all of this come from for this child? What is what was the learning style? What were the experiences? You know, what led to this point? And I think maybe more than any other professional that gets involved, more than the therapist or the psychiatrist, you know, the psychologist is gathering all of the information and putting it together, making sense of it. And so, you know, in this particular case, there's so many variables in early childhood. What led this student to, you know, to believe that he could do all these things, or why is it necessary, you know? And so it's putting all those background pieces together, and I guess I like to sort of say, you know, we're writing the story, you know, to help other people understand and understand what direction we need to go to in the future.
Hey, I have a question for you. On what do you think statistically the ratio is from the kids that we come in contact with, that on a surface level they're all going through the same things, you know, they kind of develop into the same social action, but what do you think the difference is percentage wise between social and origin problems and actually when you get into the wiring of kids and kind of what your area is?
Right. You know, I mean, that's sort of a nature-nurture question, and I think, you know, the right answer is that there's this unique combination for every individual. You know, they have things that come pre-wired, their personality disposition, their learning disposition, you know, what they do better. Is there a problem with attention? And then how that plays out with their environment. How does that play out in regards to getting reinforcement from their environment, from parents and teachers, those people that they want it the most? And often, you know, someone with a learning issue or, you know, this wiring issue, as you say, you know, it's, you know, they don't get what they need, and then they start seeking other sources, you know, for that reinforcement, and then it leads them down this path of, you know, problems. And I think that is the case for proper and thorough and formal assessment is figuring out, going back to what are the core issues, you know, and how to, you know, especially in adolescence, you know, when you're in childhood, there the problems are more pure. You know, you can sort of say, well, this is a more of a genetic problem or a, you know, a nonverbal learning problem or something. But, you know, in adolescence, those early learning issues turn into psychiatric and behavioral issues, and so it becomes very complex, and that's why many of these students end up in these wilderness programs, to stabilize and to kind of calm them down.
There's got to be some type of study that kind of breaks things down percentage-wise, isn't there, out there, that you're aware of anyways? See, the thing is, most of this stuff it's a lot of kids, I guess there's a margin of imperfection, so to speak, when it comes to the way somebody learns, the way somebody, you know, lives life, that kind of thing. And only that whole domestication process from birth on was what will cause a kid to kind of become who he is. But percentage-wise, there's just a certain percentage that it's just way out of the margin.
Yeah, Parth, is what Rob's talking about, is this the difference between the neuropsychological and a psychological evaluation?
There you go.
Yeah, that is a really good question. You know, there is research out there. I mean, even at the natsap.org or .com page, you know, there's lots of research going on to look at what are these differential diagnoses. You know, is it just a pure psychiatric issue versus something like you know, an Asperger syndrome that is more genetic? You know, I don't know what those numbers are, but I do know that you know, a lot of the problems that I see are, you know, these early, well, even genetic issues, learning issues that contribute to to all of the social, emotional, academic functioning problems. So, I mean, but the population that I see is somewhat skewed. You know, I often see the kids that, you know, they're, what is the, you know, the mild learning disorder that is contributing to all of these issues in adolescence? Those, you know, those are the questions that, that come up consistently. And so when you're asking, should we do a neuropsychological, or is a psychological exam enough? You know, I think the question is there a learning problem that's suspect? You know, is there a problem in early childhood? Could there have been some genetic issue? Could there have been even a, you know, a brain injury, an illness or an injury that is causing such issues? And it's, I think it is very understated that mild concussions can cause problems. And so looking at, you know, whether it's, you know, gestational issues, neonate issues, you know, or brain injuries related to concussions, you know, sport-related injuries. I mean, there's so many things that can affect the brain. I mean, you have to realize how complex the brain is, you know, and how fragile, you know, the brain is. And so when you shake it around and get a bump and, you know, things are going to get hurt, you know, it's going to affect attention and concentration and memory and all sorts of different functioning. And then that plays out for a long time, you know, and I mean, the studies say if a concussion happens, then really it's very likely that multiple concussions will happen, and it starts really affecting how a person can think.
Hmm. Well, you just gave me a world of excuses.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm going, now, how many times has Rob been hit in the head?
A lot.
I was going to say, would you say then that the differences between these two, as if you're doing an assessment and you're trying to determine which of these is more of the issue, is that helping to make the decision on if you medicate, and if so, to what degree?
Well, you know, I think to be clear on that question, I'm not a medical doctor, so I don't medicate. Mm-hmm. I often make recommendations to a psychiatrist or a pediatrician, you know, right, to evaluate for medication. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, these learning issues, you know, attention deficit, things like that, you have to sort of balance your recommendations between, you know, medications as well as accommodations and support for the student. And so you have to be realistic. You know, there's a lot of good data and research that say medications can help, but I don't believe anything in isolation is going to really be the trick that's going to work long term. And so you know, the attention deficit may be, you know, sort of the easiest thing to talk about as far as medicating. You know, the gold standard is still stimulant medications for most children. And you know, but just treating with that doesn't really address the issues of how do we better or improve executive functioning, you know, the ideas of organization and problem solving and these kinds of things that typically go along with problems in attention. And so it's a combination of recommendations that are really going to be useful.
Okay, so it seems like most of the problems are generated from lack of family participation in kids' lives, at least through the development. Let's take the ADD, ADHD type thing. I heard one time is, yeah, your kid has ADHD. I need to get him in a IEP on some medication, da 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 da. And the answer that this doctor in this particular situation said was, you know what? You guys got to understand that back when I was a kid, our math class would be all the class making paper boats, walking down to the little stream that's out there outside of our little school. One kid get several hundred feet away. One kid drop the boat into the water, and together you guys figure out how fast that boat moved from A to B, and that's how you did math. And that's why ADHD and all this other stuff wasn't really an issue.
Yeah, that would be a great class, you know, to have lots of interaction and outside activities and, you know, experiences. And I think a lot of great teachers use those kind of experiences to help students learn. You know, it's interesting, if I can break up your question a little bit, sure. Because you started with the kind of the family style and how does a family contribute, you know, and I think in a lot of ways the family will identify the student as having the problem. That's kind of what systems theory says, is there's always sort of an identified person or problem, you know, and then everything's sort of wrapped around that, whereas it's usually the system that is somewhat flawed, you know, the family or
exactly.
the teaching system. And it's, you know, if you were to look at sort of just the normal average bell curve, you can say that only 70% of students sort of fit in an average learning style, you know, and so you've got another 30% that somehow, in some way, doesn't fit. And, you know, you're identifying attention or a learning disability or something, you know, that says, this kid is different, and then the family starts teaching or treating them different, and the teacher starts treating them different. And unless there's a good, clear understanding of why are they different and why are we treating them differently and what can we do to help them, which is what the assessment process helps with, you know, then you've always got a kid with a problem rather than, all right, how do we help them be successful?
Exactly. You know, I probably won't get started on this, but yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's amazing how, through the dumbing down of society, how average is so like almost walking dead. It's yeah. ridiculous. There's so many people that get labeled whatever they get labeled just because they don't fit in the box. But the box every year is getting more. More dumb and more lazy and more complacent, and so to take these kids and treat them as right now we're probably in the middle of that shift, but to take these kids and treat them as they have disorders and problems and it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm actually hoping that we're not in the middle of it. I'm hoping that the pendulum has swung way too far to that direction, and I'm hoping that the pendulum is going to come back and that it's going to swing back to a level that our kids need to have to get the kind of education that they need to compete in the world market now.
Right. And that's, you know, that's an important point in that you have so many kids that have somewhat a different learning style. And once you start identifying what that is, you know, whether it's a strength or a weakness, I mean, again, most teachers and most classrooms are built for the average student. You know, there's a very set structure and way that, you know, students are taught. But then you have, you know, kids, again, either strengths or weaknesses that aren't played to. And so, you know, they get kind of left back. You know, they're not taught in the way that they need to really learn, and that goes for learning disabilities as well as gifted kids. You know, gifted kids are in many states considered part of the incorporated into the special education process because they have a different learning style.
Exactly.
So, and one, the assessment process is to understand that, and, you know, how do we support this learning style? How is it different? You know.
Well, and I'd love for us to be able to solve the problems of public school, but I think we could do a whole nother like 10 shows on that. Can you walk us through? I mean, walk our listeners through a neuropsychological evaluation so that everybody understands what it is and why it's different than say a straight psychological eval.
Sure. You know, there's a general battery, and you know, formal assessment is different than just treatment planning assessment. You know, I think that's the first point to make. You know, we're using quantitative tests that are normed, you know, against the same sort of age population as the client, And we're looking at a lot of different domains of functioning, you know, general cognitive functioning, where we look at intellect and academic functioning. And we go into specific functioning, like executive functioning, where we look at problem solving and organization. We look at attention and concentration separately. We look at memory, their ability to use verbal and visual memory, their language functioning, their visual spatial functioning, lateralization, sort of right hemisphere, left hemisphere functioning. And, you know, and then we also gather information from parents and teachers and therapists and doctors. And so we've got a lot of information, both qualitative and quantitative information, where we can really, you know, sort of broad scope look at what is going on with the student and what is causing these specific issues, you know, the specific problems. And those problems can be academic, they could be very specific learning disabilities, you know, but they often are also emotional, interpersonal, you know, functional problems that play into all of this. And so we look at that really holistically, and then we come up with a real good set of recommendations, you know, how do we help attention, not just with medications, but through structure and organization. What are the specific things and accommodations that can be put into place in a classroom as well as at home? And all of that feedback gets, you know, gets back to the parent and to the teachers, you know, to the doctors, so that, you know, so that it's a very integrated, systemic kind of solution.
Well, now, what should a parent or a therapeutic professional, what should they do to prepare for the exam?
A parent or a professional?
Yeah, in other words, if they're preparing their teen, in other words, what are some of the things that they can prepare, how they can prepare them so that you get the very best results?
Right. Well, that's a great point. You know, it's important that the psychologist, the neuropsychologist, gets as much information as possible. And so, you know, a clear understanding from the treatment team is helpful. Gathering up old reports, old psychologicals, academic reports, you know, getting information from teachers or from therapists on, you know, how a student is functioning. This is all really good information. You know, it saves a lot of time.
I'm thinking if you could work for Nintendo, they just developed Wii Fit and it all. This could be a great one.
There you go.
You could piggyback on Wii Fit 2 that's coming out.
Yeah, the new Wii Fit. Actually, you know what? You say it tongue-in-cheek, that might be a really good idea because a lot of the kids that we're dealing with, they're having trouble getting them off the Wii. So instead of fighting it.
That's weed. No. We have
Wii. Oh, yeah, that's weed. That's a whole different thing. But yeah, the kids that are on the computer games and stuff, hey, just put them on a computer game that becomes part of the evaluation.
We can call it Wii Gandhi.
There you go.
Wii Fit.
Wii Gandhi.
Okay, maybe you're not so excited about it.
Okay. What should people expect the day of the test session?
That's a good question too. You know, it's typically a long day. You know, and sometimes we break the day up if we can into two separate sessions because you know it is very cognitively taxing. You know, and for younger kids, you know, say less than 8 years old, we really, you know, push for that. But you know, the day will start where there's introductions and there's a rapport building with the student, and sometimes because of anxiety or whatever, you know, the parent will stay there, you know, with the student. If it's in a residential or wilderness program that I'll go out to, you know, I'll spend some time really just trying to get to know the client informally, letting him know what we're going to do, and, you know, trying to get their consent, you know, to what is going on and what is happening, so they understand the process and what it's for. And then we start, you know, with the testing. You know, it's a lot of quantitative testing. A lot of it looks like games and puzzles and just things that we do, and then there's a lot of verbal questioning, kind of back and forth. You know, it honestly does feel a lot like games, I think, to the students. And, you know, and it depends on kind of the battery and the problems, but testing could be anywhere from 4 to 6 to even 8 hours, depending on how intense we need to look at certain issues. And that's why we have to break it up, you know, sometimes into 2 days. You know, and then once the testing is done, you know, we'll start interviewing parents and therapists, and then, you know, within only a couple of weeks, you know, we can get a report generated back. Typically, we'll get the verbal information, to the consultant or to the parent just as quickly as possible within a few days of the testing. But then it takes a little bit of time to generate a report and put it all down on paper. So usually that happens within a couple of weeks.
Now, do you have a component in there that would be construed as humor therapy? Because I know for us, from a transport standpoint, because you're spending a lot of time with them, you know, and when we're transporting, we might be spending 10, 12, 14 hours straight with them, and we've actually put it right into our training, is that humor therapy, you know, that you need to be able to break it up.
Yeah, they stand up. We everyone develops like a 10-minute stage show.
But you almost have to, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm just wondering, I mean, do you guys have something to where it sort of breaks it up? And what's your thought on what we're doing? In other words, do you feel like doing something like that helps from the standpoint of when we're first getting them to the program, or if we were bringing them to you because you were going to do the assessment before they went to the program? Would you look at that and say, yeah, keep doing that? You're spending that much time with them. You know, you want to keep them kind of light.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a really interesting question. And I think for you guys who are transporting and you really want to have a good rapport with this client and get them to the destination with no problems. And so humor therapy and keeping it light and keeping them motivated and hopeful and looking forward, I think is great. I mean, that is very important. You know, I think the nature of my relationship with a client is a little bit different. It's a little bit more formal. Of course, I want to have a very comfortable relationship.
So that
they can share, you know, and trust, you know, in the situation. But I think in a lot of ways it's a little bit more formal, you know, and it's sort of a doctor-patient relationship rather than, you know, I'm a friend, I'm your friend, I'm here to take care of your needs, which I think is more of the transport relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've sort of got a two-parter for you. I know that a lot of the people out there listening, the economy has not been good. So the big thing now is what does something like this cost, and does insurance cover it?
Yeah, that is a really good question. The first part of the question is there is somewhat variable. You know, when you talk about psychological versus neuropsychological, you know, the neuropsychological, as I explained it, is a lot more in depth, takes more time. You know, the other part of the equation is where will I see the client? Because sometimes I see them in my office. Sometimes it's community-based. Sometimes the clients will actually fly in from other states, you know, because we can offer quick assessment times or because it's more cost-effective, you know. In California or New York State and Manhattan, it's just not unusual to see people charging $5,000 and have a 4-month wait time, you know, to do a neuropsychological evaluation. And in many places, you know, it's just a standard that insurance is not going to cover this, so parents will have to pay. Now, that said, to get to your second question, will insurance pay? Sometimes, you know, it is really variable, depending on the insurance, depending on the diagnosis. If there is a neurological reason, you know, if there is a brain injury, illness, if there's something that says, yes, we have to do this neuropsychological evaluation, then most often insurance will cover part or whole, or all of the evaluation. It's been a tricky place to be billing insurance and to working through them. So what we will typically say is, we'll need payment up front, but we will help with the reimbursement process, and again, if there's a really good medical reason to do the neuropsychological evaluation, the insurances will tend to cover, but that said, it's sometimes a crapshoot, and sometimes, especially with learning disabilities and some of the things that affect learning, the insurance will try to say, well, schools have their own assessment component, and then the school system may not have adequate assessment services. And so I think parents are caught in this paradox of what do we do, and I think my best recommendation is to get the assessment, right. Know that it's a big investment in your child's future, because when you've got an adolescent struggling, mm-hmm. time is of the essence, and hopefully the student has been assessed early in life, when they're 6, 8, 10 years old,
but Kansas hit them
especially when they're an adolescent, time is of the essence to get a good understanding so that we can get the right recommendations and accommodations in place. So.
Now, Parth, do you have somebody at your clinic that understands the insurance, the machine and what it takes to do that? Because I know that, and I'd love it if somebody else is doing it, but I find myself having to do that because I get clients that will call and they're asking what they can do in regards to their child or the child's run away. And I'll end up, because I understand the insurance companies pretty well, but I'll end up calling them and talking to the insurance and then trying to explain it to the parents, and explain to them about conversion that, yes, your policy only says it's going to do A, B, and C, but based on a conversion portion of it, you can get this done because it connects to this. And because most parents really don't know what their insurance covers. Do you have somebody there? If a parent doesn't know, can they contact someone at your clinic and they're going to be able to explain to them, at least from a probability standpoint, if their particular policy is going to cover it?
Of course. Yeah, we can work through. We all have experience in doing this, and managed care is just it's different for every client, for every insurance policy, and kind of sitting down and figuring that out and then talking to the insurance company to see what they can do. It's a very individual process, so we can certainly help.
I'm pretty sure Obama's going to take care of this in a couple more months anyways. We want the right
He's working on it.
Yeah. A little bit earlier, Rob mentioned about an IEP. And for the listeners who are not familiar with an IEP, can you explain what an individualized education plan consists of?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. IEP, or an individualized education plan, is something that has to be developed by a school system. It's part of IDEA and the free public education system that the federal government has mandated for students that have particular learning disabilities. And so there are certain criteria that students have to meet to get an IEP. And the process is basically that either a parent or a teacher will identify a problem with a student, and then they will start an assessment process, and that can be done. Again, there are some services available in the school system, but often, when you're talking about true neuropsychological problems, I think that, the problems or the assessment in the school system is often overwhelmed. And so we'll get a lot of referrals for these independent evaluations to be done. And so, if we can find that learning disability and identify the accommodations, we'll make recommendations for this IEP, where the school system will then be required to implement accommodations. And so parents will work with teachers, in developing what is necessary, and then the school system, the teachers, will be accountable for those changes or accommodations. There's actually we've got a good resource on our webpage that walks through in a very simple way how to get an IEP and how it can be implemented. It's just a two-page document, and so it really simplifies the process of getting an IEP, or at least gives parents an understanding of how that can happen. And the website is neurodevelop.com, and that resource for the IEP is in the resource section.
Excellent. This is a little off the subject, but do you know of a program for people that are addicted to texting? Because I need to have Rob transported there immediately. He couldn't even keep from not doing it right now. He had to answer it. Oh, I have to answer this.
Between that and Twitter, I think that's kind of taking over the world.
You should try it.
Yeah.
You Twitter?
What, tweet?
Yeah, tweet. Do you tweet? Alan, wait a minute.
What?
You totally do that. What are you talking about? It just hit me.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Although I have help. I have a new assistant now that's helping me learn some of those things.
I don't have that kind of money. I got to tweet myself.
Yes. I don't know if I want to go there.
I tweet myself a lot. I really like it.
Parth, at the center, at your neuroassessment and development center, what is the privacy policy? I mean, we're out here, we're in Southern California. We deal with a lot of the either the Hollywood crowd and things like that. In some cases, privacy is a huge issue, and it's a question that they ask us. Do you have a particular policy, and if so, what is it?
This is one of those things that are really detailed out on our website. But we have a very strict privacy policy. I think in a lot of ways very standard to, what you would see in programs. Our information is not shared in any way unless there's very specific consent given. And we adhere strictly to that. We adhere to HIPAA policies, and it's obviously information is of the utmost importance and confidentiality. And really the risk of sharing that information with the wrong parties is always something that we're looking at and reviewing. And in fact, we had a recent staff meeting about that because, when you get parents that are divorced and who has legal custody and rights and then getting lawyers involved and you have to be very, very careful and particular, and we always are.
Well, it's good because I'm a very big deal, and if I ever go there.
Yeah, and no, I mean, you're right. It is the kiss of death, and I think that people out there need to recognize the fact that, a center like yours, a program...
Anything, right?
Yeah, a program that's out there working with the kids, a service like ours, we are all very, very conscious of the fact that there are privacy rights out there, and that it's not going to be a situation in which, the information's going to turn up on the Inquirer or whatever, because, we have programs out there that are very ethical that are not going to let that happen. So I just think it's a good reminder for everybody.
I appreciate that.
And before we run out of time, because again, I think as I told you, time, it just flies by. If a listener has an additional question, what is the best way for them to reach you?
Sure. Well, the website is neurodevelop.com, N-E-U-R-O, neurodevelop.com. And there's information on how to contact us from there. Also, our phone number for the center is 801-649-5300. So, and a person could leave a message, and we'll get back to them lickety-split.
Well, that is great. I still need to get Rob up there, so can I set an appointment now, or...
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
but the average time for an assessment, you said, is what, maybe 4 to 6 hours?
Yeah, that's sort of average. And, doing a full evaluation in our office, it's in the 5 to 6 hour range of direct assessment time. And then, it's information gathering, and, there's a lot of... collateral information that's gathered, you know, and, you know, scoring and report writing that takes quite a bit more time, but direct time with the client is, you know, 6 hours or so.
Now, and I think when we spoke before, you said that there are also situations in which you travel to the client as well. Is that correct?
That is, yeah. You know, if a family would prefer, we can travel to, you know, to their home state or to a location, to a residential program, a wilderness program. You know, for the last 5 years, I've seen, you know, 1,000 clients or so, you know, in a lot of different situations. And so we're, you know, we can make almost anything work. And so a lot of times, especially for efficiency's sake, you know, going to where the client is makes a lot of sense. Or again, clients will come to us, you know, because they don't want to have to wait 6, 8, 12 weeks, for a local neuropsychologist to get around to them. You know, again, time is of the essence. And, you know, I've heard of 6 to 9 month wait times. That's an entire school year. You know, that really doesn't make any sense when we can do it. We can always do it in less than a month, and, you know, and sometimes quicker than that, you know, where we'll see the client and then we have a 2 week turnaround on that report. And so, you know, getting to answers and getting to change is very quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they've got a new TV show now going on. I think it's good that they've got a show out now about a concierge doctor. And then I just read something in, I think it was Yahoo or Google or something like that, said that that seems to be the next medical phenomenon, is the concierge doctor, the concierge therapist, where a lot more doctors, I guess because of the economy, are going to their patients wherever they may be.
Why don't you tell them about the Yahoo newsflash you read to me earlier?
Which one's that?
About the penguins.
Now, probably doesn't fit on this particular show. We'll have to bring that up on another show. Sorry about that. We're just cracking ourselves up here. Anyway, Parth, I just want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on. You know, I think you've enlightened us and our listeners quite a bit.
Really, almost much funnier in person too. So if you were here, you'd probably be laughing at all my great jokes.
Yeah. Now we tried to get you to come in studio.
Yeah, I wanted to come out to L.A. Believe me,
they must just not.
But I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and, you know, to better explain what psychological assessment is, what neuropsychological assessment is, and welcome questions, you know, from your listeners.
Well, and again, I thank you. And again, for the listeners, if you were driving and you were unable to take down the website or the phone number, you can go to our website at answers4thefamily.com. Go to the blog. You can put your questions in there. We will answer it, or we will forward it on to Dr. Gandhi, and he'll answer it for you. So again, Parth, have a great time. Have a great day, and I will look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're
Talk
welcome.
To you soon.
Bye now.
Bye.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
We're back. I'm Alan Cardoza. I am here with Rob Spencer. Rob is my co-host today. Rob, tell us a little bit about what we're doing in regards to our child recovery unit.
Perfect. What we have coming up is that we're putting together something called a child recovery unit. It's a team of guys and girls that specialize in locating runaways, kidnappings, the trafficking stuff, that kind of thing. These are all trained for very professional people from guys that have been in law enforcement for 16 years and led SWAT for, I think, 9 or 10 years on mm-hmm. down to the expert in the hand-in-hand stuff, which happens to be myself, mm-hmm. along with you and everything you have to offer. So.
Right. We've got a lot of investigators. We have some former professional athletes and such that are getting involved. So, yes, it is great. And, again, one of the biggest differences, we've always located runaways. That part's been great. We are also going out and we are helping people who are being trafficked. It is happening, folks. It's happening here. It's not just happening in Asia. It's not just happening in other countries. It is happening here in the United States. So if you believe that your child may have run away, they haven't gotten back in touch with you, it is possible that they have been picked up by traffickers who are moving them around. They move them to different states. They move them to different countries. People say, well, I don't understand. I mean, can't they just run away? Guess what? They can't run away, folks. Sometimes they've had their papers taken away from them. Sometimes they've been shown a picture of a relative in crosshairs and being told, if you take off, we're going to kill one of your family members. It's that serious.
And these guys are so good. The younger ones, they're brainwashed within days.
That's right.
And
we just looked over and realized that we're out of time. So again, everybody, have a great week. Be good human beings, and we will be back next week. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.